Now, Merry Christmas to all of you, and maybe you're new to Bethany. You don't know that we have three locations, Washington, and folks meeting at Vincent's and Princeton, and we have folks in our Fireside venue right now. I want to welcome you all in. Merry Christmas to all of you. Hey, why don't you make it a part of your tradition, and if this is the first year you get to do that, great. Start it now and come to a Christmas Eve service. We've got 12 of them to choose from, starting from the 22nd all the way to the 24th. And certainly there is a time that fits within the schedule of your family. Listen, mom and dad of older adult children, this is your moment to set a new tenor, a new tone in your household. To say, I know we do the gift stuff, I know we do the dinner stuff, but here's what we also do. We also do this Christmas Eve thing too. And I guarantee you, mom, dad especially, you make that declaration in your home and you say the house shuts down for an hour and a half, they're going with you, especially if they want dinner. They're going with you. So you just make that a part of your tradition. You know, it's this time of the year where, like, you know, all the Christmas movies come on and they're filled with magic. Every Hallmark movie ends well. You know, there's no tragedy there at the very end. It all comes together for them. The songs of Christmas seem so peaceful and so sensational. And I kind of buy into it, don't you, a little bit? You're like, hey, I want that. I want a little magic this Christmas. I want a little more sensational Christmas. I want a merrier Christmas this year. I kind of want a Christmas like I remember them to be when I was a kid. Remember how magical some of your Christmases were when you were a kid? I remember this Christmas. It was like the top one. I remember the very, very merry, best Christmas we ever had in our household. I don't know if that year my dad got an amazing work bonus or what, but the living room was filled to capacity with wrapped presents and toys. And my parents had told us, like, if we wake up as kids before they get up, that we could not go to the tree, we could not go to the living room, but we could wait on the landing of our staircase. It was a split staircase, wrought iron rails, and so we just kind of look at everything in the living room like a bunch of prisoners looking to get out of jail. And so we saw, like, you know, my parents knew how to do Christmas, man. They knew how to do Christmas. Christmas tree was already lit. Music was playing on the stereo. The stockings were already packed full of stuff and spilling over onto the carpet and everywhere else. And presents were laying everywhere. It was the most abundant Christmas we've ever seen. My dad just would put together some toys, and there's train sets going. There's racetracks out there and a couple pirate ships that were fighting. It was just a cool scene, man. Just absolutely mesmerizing, picture perfect kind of moment. My brother and I are there at the landing staircase, and we're just kind of dreaming about what could be in every package. And we really wanted that year a basketball hoop. And we didn't see that. We didn't see that. But we saw everything else. And so there's this argument between my older brother and I. My older brother's like, well, maybe the hoop's behind the couch. I mean, it's a big item. It can't be packed. I'm like, no, you dummy. It's probably one of those littler boxes, and there's a fold-up basketball hoop, you know? And so you can't distract a kid when he has in his head what he thinks he's going to get, right? It doesn't matter. You think as a kid you're going to get it. You've hoped for it so big, and there's just no denying you're going to get it. Like, it's got to go your way. It's got to go your way. And of course, that Christmas, my parents wake up and they release the hounds, right? And we run to our gifts and our packages and we play with all the toys. And sure enough, that was a magical Christmas. The basketball hoop was there. It was just in the dining room. We couldn't see it. It had a big giant ribbon on it. And it was the most magical Christmas, I think, as a kid I've ever experienced. And I think at some point, I don't know where, I don't know the exact year, that all changed, you know, like where it's just not as magical anymore. It just kind of lost that white Christmas kind of feel. And I don't know, maybe my sophomore in high school, you know, I was kind of anticipating, hoping for those amazing presents under the tree to be something more. And you open up the first present, and it's like clothes. And the second one, it's socks. And the third one, it's underwear. And there's nothing magical about that. And you're like, okay, from here on out, I'm never going to have a white Christmas again. You know, it's like never going to be perfect again. And maybe you have those Christmases. And I think, you know, that front of that sermon, we heard the song by Bing Crosby, White Christmas. You so peaceful, so relaxing, so tranquil. You know the lyrics, right? They're on the screen. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas just like the ones I used to know. Like, I got to go back to what I knew, kind of like rosy retrospection of remembering as a kid, like what was good, because I'm not receiving that now, but I wish I would have it now, but I can't seem to get that magic back any longer. That story of White Christmas, Bing Crosby released that song on Christmas Day of 1941. And just to give you an understanding of what was going on at that time, he sang that on the radio live. We were 18 days out from Pearl Harbor was just attacked, and 16 days out from the declaring war against Japan. And so the nation was like in a place of despair, kind of like, what's next for us? And Bing Crosby sings White Christmas. Like, hey, remember when? And I think the rest of the world was like, yeah, we remember when it was a white Christmas. And man, just to get into the context of that song, Bing Crosby knew it was such a sad song that when he went on USO tours and sang that to the troops, he refused to use that a part of his set list. He wouldn't add it to his songs because it was such an emotional song, but the troops would holler for it. And he would reluctantly sing it. And he said when he did, there was never a dry eye in the house. It was just so packed with emotion. And Irving Berlin, you guys might know that composer, great American composer, he wrote that song. He also wrote God Bless America. And he wrote that song, gosh, this hurts my heart. He wrote that song to be reminded of the Christmases that he spent with his kid prior to his son's death. His son died on Christmas Day. And he and his wife would go every Christmas Day to the cemetery. And he wrote that song to say, hey, remember when we had our kid at this Christmas? And when we had this beautiful hope and it's not there anymore. And you're like, you just ruined Christmas for me. You've ruined that song for me, right? Like maybe, I mean, that's what you're hoping for this Christmas. You're like, listen, I want everything perfect. Why did he tell me that story? I want my Christmas better than the last Christmas. And I want it better than it had before. I want to go back to those rosary days when I just remember the best things that have happened. And maybe this Christmas can be a happier Christmas, more merrier Christmas. And I think for most of us, the truth is we want this a part of our Christmas. We want this kind of Christmas. Thank you, Bing. But probably Christmas. Most of us are going to have kind of this Christmas. I think maybe even for some of us, it's going to get worse. And we're going to have maybe a Christmas like this. And it's just not going to come out right. And you're going to be like, I was dreaming of a white Christmas. And not a Porky Pig Christmas. This is not what I had on the books. I was hoping for something perfect. And I think we have all these moments in our life where we stack them up and we say, man, I wish it turned out this way. I had these hopeful expectations that it would come out this way. And it just didn't. And man, it's put me in a tailspin right now. And some of you are like hoping, dreaming for a white Christmas, and you're experiencing a blue Christmas. Like for some of you, this is the very first Christmas without that loved one that will be around the tree with you opening up presents or having that dinner with you. For some of you, you just won't be able to make it home for Christmas. It just doesn't fit in your plans. And this is not going to feel Christmas unless you're with family, but you're not going to be with family this year. Maybe for some of you, it's that moment where you're like, you know, money's tight. The economy's got the best of me, and my kids want some gifts that seem out of reach for the budget, and I'm just going to feel like I'm letting them down. And I know that they'll have a blue Christmas, and I'm going to have a blue Christmas, even though there's some still gifts under the tree. It just doesn't feel the same. And maybe it's not going the same for you. Maybe you're like, you know what? I've had better days, and I've had better Christmases, and I just wish I could have what I once had, dreaming of that white Christmas. And right now, that white Christmas looks like it's all melting away. And I just want to remind you of the very first Christmas. The very first Christmas with Mary, Jesus' mother, Joseph, Jesus' stepdad, and Jesus, as they anticipated like a very white Christmas. They were dreaming about it, but they were experiencing a very blue Christmas. And just so you know, like I just need to say this right out of the gate. Emotions in people have not changed throughout the centuries and millennium. It's still the same emotions. Mary and Joseph had the feelings of despair and letdown and anger and joy and hurt and depression. They had all those feelings like you have when they're let down. Like the technology might have changed, culture might have changed, but human emotion has never changed. And yet this story doesn't really express a whole lot of human emotion, but it does express a lot of letdown. Like let's get into it. The very beginnings of the Christmas story starts in Matthew chapter 1, verse 18. It says, this is how the birth of Jesus, the Messiah, came about. His mother was pledged to marry Joseph. She was pledged to marry Joseph. And so Mary was just like any young girl you know today in her teens that's dreaming of this perfect wedding with this dreamy man, and everything starts to change for her because she's preparing for the wedding. She's excited about her new life with Joseph. But verse 18 continues, she was pledged to be married to Joseph, but before they came together, she was found to be pregnant through the Holy Spirit. Now, Joseph didn't hope for that. He was like, whose baby is this, Mary? Mary's got this sensational story that this baby was conceived by God himself. And she wasn't expecting that a part of her life. She didn't hope that it would all go this way either. And she'd be thinking, this isn't how I planned it. And let me just tell you, it starts to unravel from there. It just starts to get worse from there. It moves on to the next verse. Because Joseph, her husband, was faithful to the law, faithful to God, he didn't want to expose her to public disgrace. He had in mind to divorce her quietly. So this young teenager who had planned the perfect wedding and to be with her dream man, it all starts to unravel for her. And she's not planning a wedding anymore. She's preparing for a divorce. And she's preparing her life to be a single mother with this child whom is God's son. My friend Tim Harlow, he's a pastor, he says, these are the moments of the Christmas story that are what he calls was but moments, was but moments. It was this way, but this happened. And was but moments. They thought it was going to happen one way, but it happened in a completely different, another way. Let me just kind of put it up on the screen. What a was but moment is, it's when you hoped it was going to happen one way. It's when you just thought it was going to happen one way, but it turned out differently than you hoped for. Like it just shattered things. It just didn't go the way you'd planned it. And this Christmas season for Mary and Joseph was full of hopeful things that didn't turn out the way they had planned it. Like they planned to stay in their hometown of Nazareth. That's where you want to have a kid. That's where you want to establish your life, is around your family and friends and your workplace. But there's a census by Rome. And if you don't do it, Rome says there's two choices. Either do what they say or die. And in Luke chapter 2, verse 4, it says, and because Joseph was a descendant of King David, he had to go to Bethlehem in Judea, David's ancient home. He traveled there from the village of Nazareth in Galilee. He took with him Mary, to whom he was engaged, who was now expecting a child. So now they're leaving. They're leaving home. They probably had a big blow up over the baby thing. Now, they've calmed their emotions a little bit. They're trying to settle those emotions down. They're still kind of have that rift in the relationship, but they now have to travel to Bethlehem. That's 90 miles away. And Mary is just weeks away from conceiving a child, giving birth to a child rather, and she has to ride on a donkey. That's a 4-day journey, ladies, on the back of a donkey, about a week or two away from giving birth. And they did not plan for that. So can you imagine her going, geez, the thing I want to do right before I give birth is ride on the back of a donkey for 4 days. That's what I want to do. No, that's not what she'd hoped for. And they didn't know. Guys, we know that God was working ahead of them and that Bethlehem had to be the place where the Messiah was born that fulfills prophecy. They didn't know that. They were just like, could there be a worse time for this census to be taken? This is the worst time. And while they didn't call the wedding off, there's still the rift in the relationship, and they're forced to leave their friends, they're forced to leave their workplace, they're forced to leave their family, they're forced to leave their home and go to a place called Bethlehem. And we just kind of pretend as we read this story that everything was like a silent night. Like everything was perfect in their story, right? It's Mary and Joseph, everything's perfect, it's tranquil. We don't get into the brokenheartedness, the blueness of their Christmas, and that things didn't go right for them. And it was packed with all this was but stuff. Like we thought it was going to go this way. We hoped it would go this way, but it turned out into something completely different. And it continues to unravel, to unfold, to get out of control. Luke's gospel tells us in verse 6 of Luke 2, and while they were there, the time came for the baby to be born, and she gave birth to her firstborn son. She wrapped him snugly in strips of cloth and laid him in a manger because there was no lodging available for them. You guys know that part of the story. There's no room in the inn, even though the baby is born. There's just no place. There's no place for them to stay because Bethlehem is overwhelmed by visitors and it's beyond its capacity. Can you just see the moment? Husbands, wives, just picture the moment for a second. You have your wife, just about ready to give birth. You've just pulled into the hotel and you walk together to the front desk and you say, is there a room available for myself and my pregnant wife, and the clerk behind the desk, she says, no, did you make a reservation? And you're like, no. And your wife just looks at you. Can you see Mary and be like, what do you mean you didn't make a reservation? This is like the blow up that would just happen there. And someone so nice says, you can stay, hey, sweetheart, you can stay in the stable. You can rent that out. It's the best we've got. I mean, they're probably thinking it's some kind of shelter. They don't have to sleep on the dirt floor. They have some covering. Hay's better than nothing. But guys, that's not the bed that she hoped for. Ladies, that's not the delivery room that she had dreamed about in her head. Come on, anybody feeling it for Mary right now? This poor girl, it was just like your heart breaks for her. And while they had these incredible moments of celebration, God's son's born to them, they had this like just solitary moment where it was just kind of like simple and nice and peaceful, but just for a moment, just for a moment. Like you get those moments where everything breaks loose and your world unfolds on itself. But then in the middle of you have like kind of like a calm in the middle of the storm. You get those moments now and then where you kind of forget about the stresses of work, forget about the family, tension that exists in the house, or you forget about the insufficient funds in the bank account, and you're just kind of like, the storm has calmed, but you know that there's another line of storms coming, like, but you just kind of hold on to that serenity for the moment. Mary and Joseph had that serenity moment that Christmas night until about 8 days later, when again, because of the custom of their faith, they got to travel back up to Jerusalem, 24 miles. So just giving birth, she now has to travel on donkey again, a day's journey, and they're taking Jesus to be presented at the temple, just as a religious ceremony. And in Luke chapter 2, verse 23 and 24 says, the law of the Lord says, if a woman's first child is a boy, he must be dedicated to the Lord. So they offered the sacrifice required in the law of the Lord, either a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. You know, at first glance, you probably go, well, you know, things are looking up pretty good. They're going to have their son dedicated. It's going to be this great religious moment. But did you know the typical sacrifice was not turtle doves? It wasn't pigeons. It was a lamb. Like, they wanted to afford the lamb. And somewhere in the law, they put in this little clause for those that could not afford, that were like financially strapped. It was the law for the poor, that if you couldn't afford a lamb for your firstborn, you could buy some pigeons. And I just want you to think for this for a moment, because they wanted to buy the lamb. I mean, after all, it's God's son. Okay, you harken back to when you had your first kid. You wanted the best for that first kid. Second kid, you're like, whatever, right? They get the hand-me-downs, the clothes, it doesn't matter. But that first kid, remember all the stuff you did for that first kid? Like, you had to have everything perfect for that first kid. You remember getting all the shopping done for that first kid? Like, all the baby gear for the first kid? I remember stroller shopping. Stroller shopping is the worst. The worst. Like, pick out a stroller. They all have four wheels. They all do the same thing. I was told very kindly, they don't. They don't do all the same thing. And that our child deserves the best. I'm like, you want the best? Okay, let's go get the best. I found that Aston Martin, the sports car company, they make a stroller. And if you have $4,000 to buy it at Harrods in London, you can get it if you want it. I'm like, okay, sweetheart, let's get the best. Here it is. Nope, our budget couldn't demand the best, so we finally just broke down and got the Costco EX, you know. I think that's the stroller that comes right out of the box with wheels that don't work. That stroller, you know what I'm talking about. You're like, yeah, I know that one, right? I've got that. And Mary and Joseph, they wanted the lamb. They wanted the lamb. This is God's son, after all. They wanted the best for their firstborn, but what did they have to settle on? Their budget forced them to settle on some pigeons. And they're let down by that. And this is just another, guys, just add it up to the was but moment. We hoped it would go this way, and it's turned out differently than we'd hoped for. And there's let down in those moments. It just continues, the gravity of the situation continues to get worse. So then they're warned by an angel in a dream that the king, this powerful guy, wants Jesus dead. He doesn't want another king being born to the Jews. And so he wants Jesus dead. And so they're told to run down to Egypt. This is not like some quick trip. This is a 30-day journey, 300 miles away. And guys, they have to live there for a couple years. So Jesus is raised in a foreign country. And Mary and Joseph now are forced to, for the safety and security of their son, to live in a foreign country. Guys, to think that's how they hoped it would work out, you're out of your mind. They didn't want any of that for their life. And let me just remind you about this was but moment stuff. It's a moment when you hope it was going to happen one way, but it turns out differently than you hoped for. And maybe this season, this Christmas, is not going as it's planned. And it has blown apart for you. Unexpected medical emergencies, cut hours at work, I don't know, cost of living maybe has strangled your budget. Maybe your family got in a big old fight at Thanksgiving, and now, like, you're texting your siblings. Like, do we go to dad's this Christmas? We go to mom's? Like, if we go to dad's, mom's going to be mad at us. If we go to mom's, dad's going to be mad at us. What do we do? And then there's nobody that wants to actually make peace. And so you're like, right now you're going, I don't even know what we're going to do for Christmas because everyone is unhappy. And I know you're not okay, I get it. You're not traveling by a donkey. That's not your trouble. But your travel plans have probably blown apart. Or it's not the travel plans that you've planned for yourself. I know that today you're not trying to find room in the inn, okay? You might be trying to book a hotel somewhere. But maybe right now you're living in a house that doesn't feel like home because the tension is so tight in your family right now. And I get it, right? You're not going to be buying some pigeons because you want the lamb and you can't afford the lamb. But I guarantee you there's some in this room that have been strangled financially that you're just not going to be able to get the gifts that your kids are hoping for this Christmas. And you feel it. You're dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones you used to know, but that's not turning out that way. Man, what do you do? What do you do when what you hope for doesn't happen? What do you do when what you want doesn't come? I think what we typically do is we lose hope, right? We just go to a place of despair. We kind of act like nothing's good. And then I think the second thing we do is we get angry. We lose our minds. This happened in our political seasons. It always happens in our political seasons. You have a candidate, you have a political party that you want into elected office, and if they don't win, you lose your mind. You act like the country's like dead now or dying or, you know, has never experienced anything like this before, and you're angered by how it all went down. You do this with the job promotion that you've been passed over for. Maybe even by someone that was not as qualified as you. You're bitter now towards the boss, you're bitter now towards the business, and you're just not going to get over it. You're bitter. Because you had hoped for the promotion, but you didn't get it. You do this, guys, you do this in the church. This is something that I see all the time. There's this expectation that the worship should be one way, or the church should be offering this or do that. And when it doesn't meet your level of expectations, you kind of just lose your mind and you get angry about stuff that has nothing to do with your faith. We do this with our kids. Like, we have a plan, we have a destiny, we have dreams for our kids. And we set it up for them. We have a path that they should be walking. And when they don't go down that path, when they don't go down that dream of yours, we kind of play with a chip now. We kind of hold it against them in some way. We don't even know really why we do. We just kind of do. We do that with our marriages. Like, we just have something that doesn't work out right. We think our spouse should do this. We hope they would do that. And now we're sour towards our spouse because it just didn't go as we hoped it would. And we do that, guys. We do that at Christmas all the time. And we do that with our life. We dreamed it would be a white Christmas, but something doesn't turn out the way we'd hoped for, and we get down about it, and we let it override everything else, and it becomes like the focus of the day or the focus of the season. Gosh, some of you guys have been through some letdowns. It's become the focus of your life. I remember one Christmas Eve, man, so specifically. I was 18 years old. My brother's 21, and the tradition in our household at that time was to go to the late Christmas Eve service. And then my mom would just put together this beautiful Christmas Eve dinner that we'd have as a family. And that was the tradition that we'd have every single Christmas Eve. And that's just some qualifiers, okay, before we get deeper into the story. You got to know that my mom knows how to make things perfect. I did not say she likes things perfect. She knows how to make things perfect. She is an immaculate lady, and so when it comes time for dinner, I mean, it's like everything's decorated perfectly. It's immaculate. The crystal's out, the china's out, you know, the finest tableware, finest silverware, and tablecloths, and candles. I mean, this is the lady that put me through etiquette school, okay? This is the lady that says, Matt, one day you're going to dine with the queen. That's why I'm doing what you're doing, and she doesn't know. I have no desire to dine with a stupid queen. Not a chance. I'd rather dine with an intoxicated, filthy, homeless person than the Queen of England. Better is a hot dog with a friend than, you know, a steak with the Queen. I think that's Bible. I don't know. I think it is. I just made it Bible. But she has these high expectations, and she lives them out, man. And so this night, listen, this night is perfect. This night is absolutely perfect. It's like a scene out of the movie. And we get back from Christmas Eve service, and the hors d'oeuvres are out, and everything's being prepped, and the house smells so good, and it's just immaculate. And my brother and I, we're 18 and 21. We're starving, right? So we're asking that question, that age-old question that every mother hates to hear when they're in the kitchen. When is it going to be dinner time? How much longer till dinner? She's like, well, kind of vague answers, and we finally figured out it's going to be like an hour and a half. That doesn't jive with two kids that are like sharks. Every 15 minutes we have to eat. So we're like wandering to the pantry, you know, kind of going back and forth. What can we eat? What can we eat? There's nothing to eat. So my dad just kind of like handshakes us some money and kind of just gives us the nod that you guys can go and get something to eat as long as you come back hungry. So what do? We go to our favorite fast food Mexican place in Southern California, Del Taco. We grab a bag of burritos and we come strolling back into the house as if that won't affect the mood of the house. In that moment, my mom saw that brown bag of burritos. Let's just say this. Our house was always a peaceful place. But that night, the outhouse hit the windmill. And this is not indicative of my mother. This is not who my mother is. She is 5'4", gorgeous, wouldn't hurt a fly. But that night, the Grinch stole her Christmas, man. You heard the old expression, like, hell has no fury like a woman scorned. She was scorned, and she came unglued, like we'd never seen before. Unglued. Yelling and screaming and hollering, and she slams the cabinet so hard it falls off its hinges and breaks, and all the pots come clamoring out. My dad, my brother, and I were just like, okay, settle, can we get out of the room somehow? The dog is barking, everything's going crazy, there's more hollering, and finally just kind of calms down. You know, all you can hear is the dog whimpering and the stereo quietly singing White Christmas or something, you know? It was one of those moments where we're like, is this over? We don't know. Is this done? We've never seen her like that before, but it's just absolute nuclear explosion. My dad. Like, we don't know what to do, but my dad always knows what to do. He's passed away now, old U.S. Marine, combat vet in Vietnam. He kind of breaks the silent tension, and he looks at my brother and I, and he says, boys, Christmas Eve has gone fobar. Meaning messed up. And we're like, what did we just do? And then he has this impromptu family meeting. It's only like my dad could do. He rounds us all together, my mom included, the dog included, right? Everybody's in this family meeting. And he looks at us like dead-eyed, only as a Marine could look at you in the eye. And he says, listen, this was just a moment in our life. But this moment is not our life. That, for me, that's probably the most hope-filled Christmas I've ever had. This is just a moment in our life, but this moment is not our life. It went south, got messed up. But there's something better. Don't worry about it. This is just a moment. It didn't go as planned. It didn't go as we hoped for. And so here's what happened. The rest of the evening went great. We apologized to my mom. We threw reluctantly the bag of burritos in the trash and waited for dinner and put all the pots back and the pans back and cleaned up the mess. And we did our best to get the cabinet door back on the cabinets and gave the dog a treat, assured him this is not the way the house is going to roll from here on out. And we sat down at that meal, and I guarantee you that Christmas Eve dinner was one of the best Christmas Eve dinners we've ever had, filled with peace and joy. And you're going to have those was-but moments in your life too. You're going to have them maybe even this Christmas, where you're hoping for that white Christmas, but it doesn't happen as you've hoped for. And my big question to you is, how are you going to respond to it? Because I look at Mary and Joseph and their story, and I keep wondering, as they went through all this stuff that didn't work out the way that they had hoped for, they don't get angry. You don't find them once showing the emotion of anger or depression. They're not shaken by this at all, but nothing's going their way. Nothing is happening the way they'd hoped for. And I don't know why, so I searched the scriptures of their story, and I think I figured out why they just never let it get the best of them. Luke chapter 1, verse 28, is just where they got their rooted hope. The angel went to her and said, greetings, you who are highly favored. What does it say? The Lord is with you. Dude, she put that and tied that to her heart, and then the angel says, well, you're going to give birth to a son, and it's going to be God's son. And she's like, how in the world? Is that even possible? I don't even know how that works. And verse 35, the angel answered, the Holy Spirit will come down on you and God's power will come over you. So your child will be called the Holy Son of God. And in verse 7, she's asking the question, how is this possible? And you know what God responds, or the angel responds? Nothing is impossible with God. And she holds on to two things. She holds on to two things. First one is this: the Lord is with me wherever I go. And nothing is impossible with God. So even when there's a census and I have to leave town and that's not what I hope for, the Lord is with me and nothing is impossible for our God. And even when there is no room in the inn and I have to give birth in a stable, the Lord is with me and nothing is impossible for our God. And even when we want the lamb but can only afford the pigeon, the Lord is with me. And nothing is impossible for our God. You see, her hope was in a different place. Her hope was not in herself. Her hope was in God. Friends, there are three kinds of hope that this world has to offer. One is biblical. The other two are secular. There's wishful hope. That's the hope that I win the lottery. Yeah, right. That's the yeah, right hope. There's expectant hope. That's the hope that every farmer knows. You plant a seed and you have the expectancy that it germinates and grows, and more than likely it's going to. But sometimes it doesn't. Expectant hope. Then there's biblical hope, what's called certain hope. That's the hope that's not based on feeling. It's not based on mood. It's not based on optimism. It's not even based on fact nearly. It's just based on expecting God to come through because he always has. Because that's who he is. Friends, I'm just asking you to kind of think about how different your Christmas would be, how different your life would be if you could just live your life with certain hope. Not wishful hope or expectant hope, not white Christmas kind of hope, but certain hope. And I'll tell you why, because things are going to fall apart. Like, things are going to come off the rails. The wheels are going to come off this thing sooner or later, and you're going to feel despair and anger because it's impossible for you to kind of build it all back together again and make everything perfect and right. Like, could Mary and Joseph see how everything would work out for them? No, they couldn't. They couldn't see how everything would work out for them, but they had this certain hope that the Lord was with them and that God makes all things possible. And that's how they could get through it all. That's how they could get through the despair and the moments of letdown. In Job chapter 8, verse 13, Job has this quote that says, "Those who forget God have no hope." Mary didn't forget God. "The Lord is with me. Nothing is impossible." Have you forgotten God? Have you determined that this whole season, this whole Christmas, your whole life is dependent upon you? Man, you're going to let yourself down. There's no hope there. There's no hope there. When we have hope in ourselves, it's going to fall apart. When we have hope in the magic or the miracles of Christmas, that's going to all fall apart. It just isn't real. How about having some certain hope? I think so many of us are having some kind of like cross your fingers kind of Christmases. I'm just crossing my fingers that it all goes well. I'm all crossing my fingers here that my uncle doesn't say anything stupid. I'm all crossing my fingers here that everything goes just as I have planned it to go. My question to you is, what if it doesn't? What if it doesn't go the way that you've expected it to go? Not just Christmas, but life. Like, why not start your Christmas like Mary and Joseph started their Christmas, with certain hope? The Lord is with me, and God specializes in the impossible. I've got those two things. I can endure anything. Because you're going to have some was-but situations happen. And you got to remember, this is just a moment in life, but this moment does not sum up my life. And I've got to hold tight to the part that nothing is impossible for God. Apart from God, there's no hope. With God, there is hope. Certain hope responds like this: God is bigger. Friends, listen, God's bigger than the burnt crust that's going to happen on the pie. He's bigger than the family blow up. He's bigger than the gifts that won't arrive on time. He's bigger than the gifts that don't fit, the gifts that don't work, or the gifts that are broken on December the 26th. You ever been there, parents? That's a bad feeling. God is bigger than anything that could go wrong this Christmas. And certain hope tells us that God is with us and we can count on God because he specializes in the impossible. So no matter what goes on, no matter what I've hoped for, even if it goes wrong, God's going to work it out in some good way. And we can stop having these kind of cross your finger kind of Christmases that maybe luck will work and we'll have a white Christmas once again. How about we just go into Christmas with certain hope, the certain hope that with God, nothing is impossible. That God's bigger than the lumpy mashed potatoes, that God's bigger than the family feud, that God's bigger than the small amount of presents under the tree, that God's bigger than the insufficient funds that we have in our bank account, that God has bigger and better plans for us, and it may not be the plans that we have for ourselves, but it's gonna work out okay because God is with us and he specializes in the impossible. The God can do more with the letdown moments than I can do with my best moments. That's who our God is. And this moment of letdown or despair that you're gonna experience or you've experienced in life is just a moment in life. That moment does not sum up your life. It does not sum up your life when God is with you. And you have a God who specializes in the impossible. Rely on Christ this Christmas and have the certainty of hope that whatever happens, God can make something good of it. Will you pray with me? Lord, we don't deserve you. We don't deserve to have all of these things that have let down and fallen apart, maybe by some of it our own accord and our own strength and our own reliance, that you just kind of come in like a superhero and have the ability to rescue it, maybe not as the way we see it needs to be rescued, but to rescue it, to make it something right of it for your glory and for our blessing. You're way too good for us. And I pray this Christmas, we don't have the cross your fingers kind of stuff. We don't have the wishful hope or the expectant hope. We have a certain hope that regardless of what happens, we'll be at peace and have joy because you are with us. And you specialize in the impossible. So Father, let us just rest in you, rely on you, have hope in you. Even if our Christmases are a little blue or they're melting away, we have hope beyond today. And may we rise out of here knowing that you're for us, not against us. And Father, that your son Jesus has died so that we might live forever with you. May we hold on to that and the hope that we have to be with you one day forever in a place called heaven. We pray these things in Christ's name.